Hello, hello. Happy Saturday and welcome to Advanced Living. My name is Ken Lesser and I'm your host for an hour of fun and adventure. As you know, each week we set a deliberate intention to bring forth something into your life that makes your life better and that it does it with an ease and a grace and a flow, something that isn't hard and difficult. We've all had enough challenges. And so today I am particularly delighted to bring forth a magnificent guest, and there's a wonderful coincidence taking place. Some of you may have heard of T. Harv Eker and his seminars. He's a Canadian seminar leader and an author who wrote Millionaire Mind. Well, it turns out that I'm at one of his seminars this weekend, and our guest today, Jan Janzen, is also connected to Harv Eker, and her book that we'll be discussing in a minute, Devil with a Briefcase, how's that for a title, folks, is one of the books that he highly recommends, and Harv is just magnificent, T. Harv Eker, for helping entrepreneurs to grow. So to get a recommendation from him that Jan's work is phenomenal, get ready, folks. Have pen and paper handy. You're going to want to tune into this and share it with friends and take advantage of all this wonderful wisdom that will be shared. To give you a bit of an introduction, Jan Janzen, she's been an entrepreneur for the majority of her life, and she purchased her first Molly Maid franchise at the age of 19, and she's also tasted the joys and success of being in business for herself and, yes, the frustrations and disappointments of failure. So she knows the ins and outs of business, and Jan's philosophy as an entrepreneur comes from a quarter of a century of real-life experience. Jan doesn't have a formal business education from going to a university where you talk about business. She has the best education, a university of life, where you actually learn. So what Jan has is plenty of what we would call street smarts. And she's been in the trenches and experienced entrepreneurship firsthand and helped many entrepreneurs on their way, just held their hands as they've gone through their own personal and professional growth under her guidance. And she's been involved in a wide range of entrepreneurial ventures, franchises, licensing, network marketing, partnerships, and corporations. And she's coached and consulted and mentored entrepreneurs and small businesses over the past several years. And she has created numerous companies, and those companies have been very successful at taking an idea and turning it into, yes, a lucrative business. Now, we all know how important that is. So what we're going to do is invite on one of our most knowledgeable and amazing guests here, Jan Janzen. Jan, hello, hello.
Hello, Ken, and thank you so much for having me today. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm just excited to, with being at a Harv Eker seminar and then seeing his endorsement of you, and plus, for people, if you have to see a cute cover of a book, Devil with a Briefcase is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it will tickle you, and that's one of the things that Harv makes mention of. She's got practical knowledge that she delivers with wit and wisdom. Now, this book, of course, I got to know, why a book called Devil with a Briefcase?
Well, that's a great question, Ken, and one I get asked all the time. You know, I think I really cover it so well in my introduction to the book, that my background is that I spent 38 years as a Jehovah's Witness, and 8 years ago I left the ranks, and I became the devil incarnate. I became the devil with the briefcase, and it certainly wasn't the briefcase that I had carried for 38 years as a Jehovah's Witness and going door-to-door, as they are so famously known for. But now it was really fully focused on my entrepreneurial career, because although I had been an entrepreneur since I was 19, I now really focused on what I wanted to do in my life and where I wanted to go, having now a completely different viewpoint and outlook on life. And so now my briefcase is about money, about profit, about making a difference in the world, and about helping other entrepreneurs to really appreciate that you can have it all, and you can have a great business, make money, have fun, and do it ethically.
Ah, wow. Well, that's important, and especially because so often people go into a business on their own thinking it's going to be easy, and oftentimes it turns out to be a lot more work, and financially it can be a disaster. So being one's own boss, if the boss isn't smart enough, then you're working for the wrong person. Now, one of the things that I'm intrigued with your work is this thing we call a spiritual entrepreneur. I mean, it's one thing to be an entrepreneur, but would you get into a little bit more, because you talk about the devil, and so there's obviously got to be spirituality to this.
There is. The subtitle to the book is called 101 Success Secrets for the Spiritual Entrepreneur. And how I define the spiritual entrepreneur is someone who recognizes some sort of supreme power. And Ken, I don't care what that looks like. It could be having a bath, you know, by candlelight with a glass of wine and just chilling or meditating. It could be taking a walk in the woods. It could be, you know, attending church. It could be, you know, spending your holidays at a monastery. I don't care. It doesn't make any difference. But a spiritual entrepreneur does believe that there is some sort of supreme power. They base their business on values that mean everything to them. I think values are so underrated in business today. And to me, values are the foundation of my business. Profit is important, but people are even more important. They love what they do, and they want to use their gifts and talents to bring joy to themselves and others. Making a difference in the world is an important part of their life. Their business is built on high ethics and spiritual principles. And, you know, with The Secret being so popular, people are now very aware of the law of attraction. Well, that really is a spiritual principle. It just was called in the Bible, you reap what you sow. Mm-hmm. So their business is built on those kinds of spiritual principles, and there's many of them. The law of attraction is simply one. They're concerned about the planet and contribute to the harmony and well-being of the environment, and they want more from their business than just to pay the bills. So that's my definition of a spiritual entrepreneur. So I think there's a lot more spiritual entrepreneurs out there than perhaps one would have thought. And a lot of people are saying, well, that's me. I really do want it all, and I think you can have it all.
Ah, okay. Well, that's important.
I know it.
Yes. Now, for those that want to also expand onto another browser and take a look, can we give out your website right now?
Absolutely. Devilwithabriefcase.com.
Okay. And that we'll just get folks that want to take a look at that, and that's a real easy name to remember,
Devilwithabriefcase.com.
Now, you've put forward some important things about being what a spiritual entrepreneur is. Of course, I guess for a bottom line person, we'd want to know, well, you know, why is it important? Is that really going to make me more money? So what would you comment there? Why would someone even want to be one of those?
I think the people want to have a business that feels good. I think that most people look at an Enron type of situation and they feel a certain amount of disgust and horror, but they also will say, you know, if that's business, then I don't want any part of it. And we've got so accustomed to thinking that business is cutthroat, it's a bit dirty, you got to play low and in order to win. And I say you don't. I absolutely, matter of fact, insist that you don't have to, that you can run your business with your values, with high ethics, you can have fun, and you can be profitable. A matter of fact, I think it's going to be the only way to run a business over the next 10 to 20 years.
Ah.
So people who are getting on board now really will be way ahead of the game. And we're starting to see the shift. You know, we're starting to see people who are realizing that they need to be concerned about the environment, for example, or they're giving back a portion of their profits to a charity. They're doing some philanthropic work as well that is combined with their business. That's all part, really, of what I'm talking about. We're starting to see the shift, and I think it's wonderful that companies are now being held more and more accountable. People are saying, so do you have a foundation set up to make a difference?
Mm.
What are you doing as far as the environment goes? I think this is all important. This is the shift towards it not being just about profit, and you're going to do it no matter how you do it, no matter who you have to step on, and that you're going to get to the top. This is about really coming at it from a very different perspective, and one that feels good, Ken. At the end of the day, it feels good, and it makes you money. Let me tell you, it makes you money.
Uh-oh. Now, feeling good and making money now, and at the same time, I mean, before, that meant probably selling drugs. But now we can feel good and make money and do things that are legal. Jan, this is quite intriguing.
I think it's not even that we can. I think we need to. I don't think this can even be an option anymore. I think that people absolutely need to get out of their head once and for all that you cannot be a spiritual person and be wealthy at the same time. If you're spiritual, then you need to be broke. If you're rich, then then you have to be an underhanded criminal. And so that to me, we need to be able to combine wealthy with an entrepreneur and a spiritual entrepreneur. I think it's mandatory. I think it's our obligation. I really do. I think it's our responsibility as custodians here on this planet to make the money so we can not only look after ourselves well, take care of our health, take care of our family, but also give back.
Well, I know in this country, when I studied American history and we looked at some of the people that J.P. Morgan's, there's a number of the big wealthy families, they were called robber barons. Mm-hmm. And it was glorified. They did well in business, and then they set up foundations and gave back. But what they did to get their wealth was really way out of integrity. Mm-hmm. And I hear you talking about a different way of being and making a – that's very exciting. Now, I want to clear something up because some people might have – because so often religious organizations and some of the precepts have not delivered people's needs and have not helped them to live quality lives. So there could be people turned off if they thought this was a religious book. And can you address that?
It's absolutely not religious. I don't consider myself the least bit religious, although today I'm a non-denominational minister. I am absolutely not religious, and this book is not religious. I think when I grew up in a very, very strong religion as one of Jehovah's Witnesses, Ken, I thought that religion and spirituality was synonymous. And what I learned after I left is that they don't have anything in common, that spirituality and religion don't necessarily have one single thing in common. So I'm now incredibly spiritual, but I'm not the least bit religious. And so this book is not the least bit religious. It does refer back to the Jehovah's Witnesses so that we can take some really cool lessons from a very successful religious organization and apply it to your business, but it is definitely not religious. Promise guaranteed.
Okay. Well, good. That's an important point. We want to be able to deliver, quality and not step on people's toes so that they won't be, but with that Jehovah's Witness background, they won't be getting a knock at the door for every person that buys your book. Okay. Well, but the Jehovah's Witnesses, as an organization, is very successful. So I'm just wondering, you've used them as a role model. Would you explain a little bit about what prompted you to do that?
Well, when I left the Witnesses in 1999, Ken, I was so indoctrinated in their way of believing and their way of being that I just continued to run my businesses. And as I brought on more people to work my businesses with me, they would often be stunned or surprised or would question why I did what I did and how I did what I did. And I realized that I really was just implementing things that I had been trained and now had become second nature. And so many people are very, very familiar with the Jehovah's Witnesses, perhaps because they've probably been called on at their door on a Saturday morning, or perhaps they've seen the headlines, the Jehovah's Witnesses let child die because of refusing a blood transfusion. But what most people don't know is what makes that organization tick and how well it operates. For example, around the world last year, there was almost 7 million Jehovah's Witnesses in close to 100,000 congregations around the world. And those 7 million people are all volunteers. Not one of them is paid. Not one person in that entire organization is paid a salary.
Wow.
Okay? And yet last year, those 7 million people did 1.4 billion, with a B, hours in the preaching work, going from door to door and teaching people about the Bible. Now, I look at that and I go, there's a lot of corporations out there that would love to be able to get their employees to do anything like that. Pay.
Yeah.
And so
exactly.
When you look at that as a role model, then what is it that drives an organization that is incredibly diverse? I mean, they print in over 300 languages. and they will take a peasant from Nepal and a wealthy business person from London, England, and they will lay down the same rules, guidelines, systems, and structures, boundaries, and they will expect them both to do the same thing. That's pretty incredible as well. So when I looked at all of that, I thought, God, I don't want anybody to have to spend 38 years sitting in a kingdom hall like I did, or spending thousands and thousands of hours pounding on people's doors, unless they choose to. But there's lessons that I can share so that you don't ever have to do that, and that's what I share in my book. It's a very different book. It's a fascinating book. It's like getting the insider secret to an organization that you probably know very little about.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I've only had contact with the people that have come to the door and chatted briefly, and I was polite and really had other spiritual interests, so I didn't pursue it. But I'm now learning that it was quite a massive global organization that wasn't well organized. And if we're going to be successful in business, being well organized, that's got to be high priority.
For sure, and it's all about systems. And so it's systems that drive that organization. It's systems that drive any successful organization. But to be able to have systems that cover such a wide range of people, of culture, of ethnic origin, of language, of economic structure, and all volunteers, that to me takes it to another level of, oh my goodness, this is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and so today an entrepreneur that turns to you is getting experience not just about what may be a small business in their hometown, but with the global markets opening up and the internet, you have a background that lets people know about how to connect globally. That's powerful.
Yes, it is, and I really think we should be doing business all over the world. I have people who have bought my book in South Africa and Australia. I have people who are on my newsletter all over the world. I mean, it quite amazes me. Germany, India, Portugal, Scotland. We really can be doing business all over the world.
Mm. Well, that's important, definitely. Now, I want to kind of touch on something that might be a little delicate, most of us have been through something that's kind of caused problems in our lives, and you'd explained that you've been with Jehovah's Witnesses for 38 years, which is a big chunk of time, and left them, and then I think you got started when you were 6 years old. So I mean, a huge portion of your life. I'm just curious if you wanted to share a little bit about what prompted you to move on, and perhaps how you made that transition.
Well, it certainly wasn't an easy decision to make. I had been born into a family that had just become Jehovah's Witnesses, and my husband had been raised as a Jehovah's Witness also. And so here we were. We had just returned from being missionaries in Ecuador for 4 years. I was very, very ill, Ken, when we came back. I think one of the things about being sick is you don't have as much patience as when you're healthy. And I think you also are still willing to gloss over things that you see. And I just saw things that really started to make me uncomfortable. And it was a tough decision, though, to leave, because it still is your entire way of life. And the reason that I've really chosen to tell people about this is because I think many people avoid leaving something that is difficult. It could be a marriage. It could be a business. It could be a career. It could be a religion. It could be a family situation. It could be a home. It could be a community. And they'll often say, oh, but it's so tough. And it is tough. We took 3 years to make the decision. And when we finally did decide that we wanted to move on and explore what life was like outside this cocoon that we had been both raised in, we knew that the moment we made that decision that we would lose all of our friends. And we would also lose a number of family members because they were all Jehovah's Witnesses. And yet we still chose to do that. And then, quite to my surprise, 9 months after that, my husband of 18 and a half years decided to end my marriage. So not only did I lose all of my friends, lost most of my family, but I also lost my husband over it. So it truly was a life-changing decision. And within a space of literally that first year, every single bit of foundation that I had ever known in family, friends, marriage, and an organization that completely dominated every single thought and activity, my life was gone. That was a pretty freaky and frightening place to be, Ken. But it also forced me to really become the woman that I am today and the entrepreneur that I am today, the minister that I am today, and to realize that I had to really go deep and there was a lot of work to be done. But, you know, it can be done. So I've encouraged people, don't put up with stuff because it's the easy way out. It wasn't an easy decision to make, but, boy, it certainly was the best.
Well, that's, and you're living proof that you've gone on and made your life work better than ever and used all those years of the past to really bring forth the blessing or the benefit of a global organization and other lessons that'll help us entrepreneurs. So my hat's off to you for that. That's really definitely making the lemonade out of the lemons.
It certainly
now,
is.
Now, I'm curious. People are going to want to be ordering your book, and shortly we'll be opening the phone lines in case people have call-in questions. What are some of the benefits that listeners can learn about growing their business from your book? Devil with a Briefcase, folks. That's 101 Success Secrets for the Spiritual Entrepreneur.
What I've done in those 101 Success Secrets, Ken, is I have covered the entire gamut of running a business, everything from organization to personal appearance. I'm probably the only person that has a chapter on cleanliness and having a shower and grooming to being flexible, to becoming comfortable with being uncomfortable, to how you deal with people, their opinions, how you become flexible, how you deal with objections, how you handle rejection. I mean, this book is so multifaceted. And it's the kind of book that you don't have to read in order. You could literally open it up and pull out any one of those chapters and read it, and it completely stands on its own. So, you know, in growing a business, people are very, often I'm very limited in what they think it takes to grow a business. But I always say you will only grow as much professionally as you are willing to grow personally.
Ooh.
And so your business is a reflection of your personal life. And my other one is you do not get what you want in your business. You get who you are. And so to me, the importance of everything that I do in my life, how what I look like when I go to the grocery store, how I treat my family, how I handle my friends, how I handle every single thing in my personal life is then becomes reflected in my business life. And so this book kind of jumps back and forth in all aspects. Because as a Jehovah's Witness, they do. They will cover absolutely every single thing, from basically your sex life to your, you know, to your diet to every single thing. They talk about it, and it's an open book. And so you really do understand that your entire life, and you know, as Harv Eker says, how you do anything is how you do everything.
Yeah.
And I firmly believe that. But I always say, you don't get what you want in your business. You get who you are. And that's why it's so important that who you are is everything that you want yourself to be.
So when Gandhi made that quote about you want be the change you want to see in the world,
mm-hmm.
This is you're applying that in a way to business. It sounds like
absolutely.
And boy, we know what Gandhi was able to accomplish in a peaceful, loving way, free up an entire nation from the most powerful. One of the most powerful countries in the world. So this is powerful. Wow.
Very powerful.
Now, you have, from what I understand, that you might be able to share with our listeners three little-known secrets around success that you could discuss in this book.
Well, there's so many secrets, but I have picked three that I think are not known. I mean, people talk about some of the stuff all the time. I have presented it oftentimes from a very different angle. But the first one is to admit when you're wrong. And I think a lot of people spend a tremendous amount of energy defending themselves. And really, at the end of the day, there's going to be times as an entrepreneur that you're wrong. So just admit it. I'm wrong. And I give the example in the book of Tylenol. You know, when they had that scare several years ago and, you know, seven people died, Tylenol didn't defend themselves and make excuses. They admitted that they made a mistake. They did a massive recall. It cost them probably, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, it was a massive thing. And yet they've come back and people today buy Tylenol all the time. On the other hand, we have Ford and the Firestone fiasco, and you know they didn't admit they were wrong for a long time, and it created a lot of problems. Look at where Ford is today. And so there's a very good example, and we have this idea that there's something wrong or bad about admitting when you're wrong. And there's nothing wrong with saying to a client or a customer when you've screwed up and you've made a mess of something and an order's gone out wrong or there was, somebody wasn't polite or whatever, to say, I am so sorry. We were wrong. We made a mistake. How can we rectify this? And then just rectify it.
Yeah.
And I think if people just did that, they would be way more successful, because I would much rather just hear somebody say, you know what, we did mess up, we're really sorry, how can we make this up to you? As soon as they go into defense or they go into pretending that it never happened, that's when I think customers get angry and upset and really ticked off, and that's really when they create a much deeper ditch to bury themselves in than if they just said, we were wrong. The second one is to be flexible, yet being convicted. And there's a very big difference. I think people are very wishy-washy about a lot of things because they are very concerned about offending people, and yet they don't also know when to be flexible. There is a time to be flexible, and there is a time to be absolutely rock solid in your conviction. And so I talk about that several times because it's something that, as a Jehovah's Witness, I had to perfect. As you're going from door to door, let me tell you, you have no idea what's on the other side of that door. You have gone with a watchtower, for example, on Jesus Christ, and the Muslim comes to the door. Well, he ain't going to talk to you about Jesus Christ. You need to be flexible in that moment.
Ah.
And yet, when it comes down to, like, for example, I carried a card that said that I would die rather than take a blood transfusion. And so that was my conviction, right or wrong, and agree with it or not agree with it, that was a conviction. So in your business, there's a time to maintain values, boundaries, systems, and structures, and there is a time to be flexible. Most people don't know when to do that. I talk about that. And then the third little known secret is my favorite chapter, Ken, and it's chapter 14. It's called Stop Caring So Much About What Other People Think About You. And I think people, again, get so hung up on, I don't want to offend, and I don't want people to not like me. Oh my goodness, they may not like me. Imagine, Ken, if somebody didn't like me. And I say in my book, there's people who don't like Mother Teresa and Oprah Winfrey. Not everybody's going to like you, so get over it. I mean, my goodness, if there's people who seriously do not like Mother Teresa, and there's people who do not like Oprah, you and I don't have a hope in hell that everybody's going to like us, Ken. I hate to break this news, but
yeah,
they aren't. And we need to get over that.
We just can't make everyone happy, huh?
We cannot make everyone happy. And so as I finish off that that chapter, I say, and I love this quote from Lao Tzu when he said, when you are content to be simply yourself and don't compare or compete, everybody will respect you. Notice he didn't say everybody will like you.
Ah.
And so Jehovah's Witnesses are very well respected. They're not necessarily liked. What I care about at the end of the day, Ken, is did I like me? Because if I can go to bed and sleep like a baby, feeling completely good about what I did today, the difference I've made in the world, the fact that I motivated and inspired and helped people to love themselves a little bit more and to feel better about themselves, then I like me. And there's people who have nasty things or bad things or whatever things to say about you, and you really do need to be able to put your blinders on and just stop caring so much about what other people think about you. If people just did those three little known secrets in their business, their business would go through the roof.
Hmm. Gotta like that. Now, and that's coming from you, Jan, with almost 26 years of entrepreneurial experience. I gotta ask, what excites you most about the current trends in business that you see?
I think what excites me the most is that I hope there never be another Oprah. I think the reason I say that, and I'm certainly seeing it, is the tremendous amount of niche marketing, whether you want to call it niche marketing or niche marketing. It really means that you can be a big fish in a little pond. It means that you can be outrageously successful. For example, one of my mentors is Joyce Meyer. She's one of the most well-known, successful female ministers on the planet. Last year, her ministry did close to $100 million. Now, that's successful by anybody's standards. And yet, I can talk to a room full of people, and very few people will know who Joyce Meyer is.
Mm-hmm.
That means that Joyce can go to the grocery store, she can go shopping, she can go out for dinner, she can travel, she can lead a life And I think that's one of the most exciting trends, is that I can become very well known, very successful, have a very, very profitable business in my niche market, and yet I can still maintain a life. Oprah can't.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the big celebrities and stars, because one of the things that people need to continually appreciate is that we have become so fragmented. There was a time when, as I talked to you about I Love Lucy and the show when Lucy and Ethel are stuffing chocolates in their mouth, I hardly ever talked to one person, right, that hasn't seen that I Love Lucy.
Ah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
People remember that, right? When they couldn't, when Lucy couldn't keep up with the conveyor belt.
The production line, yeah.
The conveyor line. They were shoving the chocolates in. Why? Because everybody and their dog watched I Love Lucy, because we didn't have choice. Today we have choice. And consequently, that means that you can be exactly who you want to be, you can offer exactly what you are awesome at offering, and you can create that niche market and deliver product, and you can be very successful at it, but you don't have to have your life dominated by it. And I think that's really exciting.
Oh, very much, to be able to be successful and to have a life at the same time.
Yes.
Because many entrepreneurs that I know of, even if they're successful, they are so busy with their business that their personal life suffers. And that's not good.
And that's not good. Or they become so well-known, like an Oprah, that they can't go anywhere without bodyguards. Every time
yeah.
you lose 5 pounds or have a baby or get pregnant or who you're having an affair with, it's on the front page of the National Enquirer. Thanks, but no thanks. You know, if I gain 5 pounds, I don't really want it broadcast on CNN. Thank you very much. That's what I really see today in the trend in current trend business, that I can lead a very private life and yet still be very, very successful.
Ah, oh, that's wonderful. Let me take a moment here to remind people to the name of your book, Devil with a Briefcase, and that they can go and learn more about it at devilwithabriefcase.com.
Hello.
Hello. Jan? Jan?
Hello?
Hi, everybody. This is Senia Seaver, and you're listening to Dr. Bell. Well, I forgot to say who I am. Sorry about that.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, keep that, Don. Be sure and keep that in there. I like those improvs. Yeah, go ahead. Especially with a laugh and all that.
Yeah. Who am I? I just forgot.
Hello again. We got temporarily cut off due to the fun of technology, and having that happen on the seventh day of the seventh month of 2007, I'm amazed. Let me give the phone numbers out in case some of you out there have some questions for Jan. USA, call-in line 877-876-5227 for our friends in Canada. 888-815-9756, and for the rest of the good listeners all over the world, 530-876-3222. So, Jan, I wanted to check in with you. Being in business, putting ourselves out there, I know you went through a lot of rejection as a Jehovah's Witness, and business people have to deal with that. We've just discussed you can't make everyone happy. There's going to be some people upset. So what tips can you share in your book for handling rejection?
I think one of the greatest pieces about handling rejection is to appreciate that every single one of us says no every day. So, for example, I can go in and try on address at a clothing store and say no? Is it because I hate the sales clerk? No. It simply is because maybe the dress is inappropriate, it's too much money, or I don't like it, or whatever. We will be offered things at a restaurant. We'll be offered dessert, or we'll be offered extra dishes, and we'll say no. Is it because you have a vendetta against the restaurant? No.
No.
Okay? And so when people say no to us, we have this idea that it's something personal. But if you stopped and thought about how many times in a day that you say no, then you would appreciate that people are simply saying no because it isn't anything about you personally. It's simply that they are exercising their free will. And so when you stop thinking that it's about you and you just realize that they are making choices, and we all make choices, and if you just kept track of how many times in a day you will say no. No, I don't want the side order of fries. No, I don't want my windows washed. No, I don't want, you know, to upgrade. No, I don't want the more expensive package. No, I don't want to buy that dress. No, I don't want to buy this. No, I don't want to shop there. No, I don't want to do this. You would realize that it's people who do this every day. You do this every day.
Uh-huh.
So why do we think then it's personal? And if you can get over that it's not personal, it changes everything. And so if somebody says no, to me, first of all, it's not a big deal. And second of all, if someone says, you know, I don't like that color, great. Well, then what color do you like? Like, instead of looking at it as some sort of rejection, again, thank you for sharing that information, because now I've had a chance to get to know you better.
Yes.
And so it's really all about our attitude. We have this idea, and it comes back to, again, you know, low self-esteem, oftentimes thinking that we're not good enough, which is the foundation of all the work that I do. Of course you're good enough. Of course you're good enough. You know, we're all good enough. We're all amazing when you stop and really analyze. So it really does come down to just knowing that people say no just like we say no. It's not personal.
Wow. So that's a big take a deep breath out there, my beloved listeners, and let that sink on in, that we can make choices ourselves, and when other people are doing it, we can just accept it for what it is and know it's not about us. They're just making a choice, and we can use that information and still be feeling good in our hearts, and we may, from that place of calmness, be thinking more clearly and be able to respond better. Mm-hmm. So, Jan, that's marvelous advice.
You know, and can people need to understand, I say this from a tremendous amount of experience. You know, when we were missionaries in Ecuador, I was mobbed by a group of about 100 angry Ecuadorians. I have had hoses turned on me. I have had dogs sicked on me. I have been yelled and screamed at. I have had hundreds of doors slammed in my face. So when I talk about rejection, I've lived it. This is not something that I'm telling you that I haven't gone through personally.
It wasn't just a casual no, thank you.
It wasn't a casual no. These were pretty vehement no's. And they were very opinionated. And yet, so I really, when I say these things, I'm truly coming from experience on this. And if you can change your viewpoint, and I knew, I was trained from the time I was a young child, Jan, they are not rejecting you. They are rejecting your message. And I knew that if I was going from door to door selling Girl Guide cookies or selling lotto tickets or supporting a charity, I would have got a very different reaction. It was simply the message. It wasn't about me. I think that really, that training really instilled in me, and then having to just live it. I mean, you have to go from door to door. You have to go through this. And so you just learn to toughen up. You really do. And to not take it personally.
Sure. Well, that's a key there. Now, what I'm curious about, let's say someone has made some business plans, and as you know, sometimes the best made plans, they may not start going as you wanted them. What happens if someone gets scared or starts thinking negatively about the plans that they're making?
Well, people need to appreciate, too, that fear is a natural part of life. I always say if you're not somewhere between scared and excited, that you really aren't living life. So fear and excitement are exactly the same emotion. It is our interpretation of them. And so when, for example, if I was to look at someone on a roller coaster and you see them coming over that hill and you've got one person that's hanging on for dear life that looks like they're green and they're going to throw up any minute or die or pass out, they just want to be anywhere else but, and the person next to them has got their hands up and they're screaming and they're celebrating the same ride. And I'll tell you, it is exactly the same feeling. But it is the perception and the reaction to that feeling that changes everything. And so rather than get scared, I just choose to get excited. And so every day I get up and I go, you know, I don't know what you've got planned for me today, God, but I know it's good and I can't wait. And there's lots of times I don't know the answers, but, you know, I assume that somebody out there does and I want to get it. And so I just keep on saying, you know, I need the answers to this. I need the answers to this. I need to know what to do. And I really do rely. I mean, that's what my whole spiritual entrepreneur home study program for entrepreneurs is. I talk about having a CEO. I don't want to be CEO of my business. I am COO. I am chief operating officer. But every day I literally turn, you know, my life over to some sort of supreme power and say, I don't know how to do this, but I know you do, so figure it out and give me the Reader's Digest version, please. Because I got a lot to do. You got me busy, so you know, I need the shortened version. And just realizing that it's a place of excitement. I don't know what's going to happen today. I don't know what's going to happen this week. I don't know what's going to happen this month. I don't know what's going to happen this year. But I do know it's going to be amazing. That I can trust.
And I don't know if you'd be willing to share, because one of the things that you offer besides your book is some coaching.
I do. I coach entrepreneurs all over the world. And I do some pretty interesting coaching, because I also have a gift of healing, and I can see the emotional stuff that holds people back. And so we can really look at those emotions. I would say it's the thought processes that create those emotions that create the results. I'm able to really pull apart those thought processes. And everybody would love to think that their thought processes are just kind of nicely organized, like a dinner plate where you've got your carrot sticks neatly lined up and your potatoes and meat in separate little corners. Thought processes are such a convoluted mixture. They look more like a dog food put in a blender.
Uh-oh.
And so I'm able to pull those thought processes apart and really then look for the emotion that they're creating, heal that emotion, and then the results are different. So it's a very unusual type of business coaching, because I'm able to go from the spiritual. We can be dealing with a very spiritual issue at a soul level, at a subconscious mind level, at a body level, and the next minute we can literally be talking about your website and marketing and creating joint ventures.
Ah, wow. Now that's amazing to have that combination of things. And if you were sharing a little bit about how you developed this talent?
Well, it really came through sheer stubbornness. It really was. Because as I came out of a very, very programmed way of believing and now had to start all over again, I had walked on fire and jumped off a cliff. My life still sucked. I mean, it really was a mess. I was near bankruptcy. My health was a mess. I had very few friends. I wasn't happy. You know, and every day I would just think, this can't be what it's all about. And so I was very insistent. I would say, God, you are going to tell me what you haven't told anybody else. I was like a pit bull with locked jaw.
Uh-huh.
And I would just question and question and question. And finally I started to get information. And it just has been given to me over a period of about 3-4 years now. And so I have a very interesting understanding of things like the abdominal brain. Well, nobody even talks about the abdominal brain. Edgar Cayce talked a little bit about it in like 1909, said that it was more powerful than the cerebral brain. And it is, and yet nobody even talks about it. I actually will talk to your abdominal brain.
Ah.
We will find out what is driving that abdominal brain, because if that's what's driving my life, let me tell you, I want to become up close and intimate with it.
Yeah.
And you are, but you have no control over it. So it really was, I understand tribal mentality, how it has a huge effect. Genetic coding. Nobody, again, talks about genetic coding, Ken, and how our background and our heritage has a huge effect on our life. And I'll give you a funny little example. My background is Russian. My father was born in Russia.
Mm.
And consequently, what does a good Russian woman have? She has soup on the stove. And that's security is having hot soup. So I was raised to make soup, and as my life got more and more complicated, I just really got into making soup. Until a couple of years ago, I literally had soup. It was just, I had freezers full of soup, but I was living alone at the time. I mean, in here I had soup. Freezers full of soup. And it didn't matter how much money I had in my bank account. It mattered how much soup I had in the freezer. That's where I felt secure. Well, when I was able to heal this, it was fascinating. It took me 7 months of eating soup every day to get through all the soup in my freezer.
Oh, my gosh.
But as my soup supply went down, my bank account went up.
Ah.
Ah, very interesting.
Yes.
Because I was able to disassociate the soup at a genetic coding level from being important in my salvation and being my security to realizing that today we don't live on soup. You know, it's money. We need money, and we need to create that wealth. And so I thoroughly enjoy making soup. I still eat soup, but it now isn't, I don't look at it as my security blanket. Very different attitude, and it's had a massive effect, that one thing, on my wealth.
Ah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Every person has genetic coding. And when we look at that genetic coding and how it's having an effect on your life, you would be horrified. Horrified.
And it sounds like for most of us, it's so natural and a part of our lives that that we don't notice it.
No, you don't. You wouldn't even be aware of it. No.
Huh.
So that's just some of the work that I really, to me, I don't know where, if it's ever done anywhere else in the world. I truly have just spent hours and hours in the lab with God, being very persistent, very tenacious, very stubborn, very determined.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the old thing, ask and you will be, and the answers will be given.
You will receive, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there's living proof, and apparently it wasn't just a casual asking that you put that forth with a tenacious passion.
I did. I do. I like I say, I was a pit bull with locked jaw. I was adamant because I thought, oh my goodness, here I am in my early 40s. I'm at the prime of my life, and my life is a mess. And so I really, really, really was adamant that I had to get through it. And I promised that if I was helped to get through it and I could learn, that I would then turn around and I would help others, which is what I did.
Well, that's fabulous. And I don't know if you have any examples. You'd make mention of that one with soup in your life personally. Anything else you might be able to share with some of the people that you've worked with? Of course, keeping its names confidential, but...
Well, for example, I work with a lot of people in Canada. We have a tremendous number of people who are from Eastern Europe. And so Eastern Europeans were raised very much with that something bad is going to happen. You know, so there's a real lack of stability at a fundamental level, as far as feeling that what you build will be here, because either you're going to be raped and pillaged, there's going to be a war, the currency is going to be devalued, there's going to be famine, there's going to be something bad will happen. And when you are run by that program at a genetic coding level, it affects everything.
Wow.
And that's just one example.
Yes.
You know, another example is someone who has come from Ireland or Scotland. A very, very strong work ethic, but very much that you will need to work hard. It can't come easily.
Ah.
And so people are very much programmed that they have to work hard.
It's kind of like the Rocky thing.
Absolutely.
You might win, but you're going to be beaten terribly in the process.
That's right. You know, then there's a tremendous amount of influence from religion that people have been programmed with. And so we carry a tremendous amount of baggage. And I always give my clients the illustration that it's like if you were running for the plane, but here you were carrying everybody's luggage that was on that plane, you'd never make it.
That's massive baggage.
And it's not your stuff. And so what I do is I literally cut the connection to that luggage that isn't yours. And then we look at what truly you want is your luggage. And I base all my work at a DNA and cellular level with the four foundation cornerstones, which is joy, love, peace, and prosperity. If you can have joy, love, peace, and prosperity in your life, you have got it made. There is nothing you can't have. There is nothing you can't do.
Yeah. Well, see, to me, Jan, you're combining one of the hugest keys, solid business advice, combined with ability to get people's stuff out of their way so that they can actually implement this stuff and not be sabotaging themselves along the way.
Yeah. That's why it's a very, I mean,
now,
it is, it's very
for
successful.
Consulting, do people go to the devilwithabriefcase.com website or do they
If you go to my janjansen.com site, that's J-A-N-J-A-N-Z-E-N for the American.com or J-A-N-J-A-N-Z-E-N.com, you can be directed to all of my sites and there is a piece there. I don't actually advertise or actually talk about my coaching and healing work, Ken, because all of my business is actually done through referrals. And so I have a fairly full schedule. And so I don't do any marketing, any advertising for it. But it is there. But all of my business is done by referrals.
Okay. And so as we're getting close to wrapping up, I'm just wondering, there's anything that you could share with our listeners that would be key pieces of advice or some ways to help address some of the big challenges that people are dealing with that they could turn to your book and help and get some help?
Well, I want people to first of all understand that this book isn't only for entrepreneurs. I've had parents, teachers, teenagers, people of all walks of life read this book and love it. And there's a couple of reasons why. One is that I've kept the chapters really short. There's no chapter that is more than 600 words.
Ah.
And so every single chapter is 1 to 2 pages. So I call it a bathroom reader. I mean, seriously, you can go sit in the bathroom and read it. You can read it while you're having coffee. People use it as a devotional. They will open it and say, you know, what do I need today? And as I said, any chapter can be read in any order. So you can literally open up the book, read whatever chapter, and it's fabulous. And so the fact that they all stand alone, people are loving that book. It's very easy. If you like the way I speak, it's the way I write. And so it's straightforward, it's fun. I use lots of examples, lots of stories, and lots of secrets. And so I think that if I was to tell people anything, I would say education is such a fundamentally important part. There is no reason to ever struggle in your business or in your life. There's somebody who's made the same mistakes you're making right now, I promise you. You know, as much as you can think nobody else is going through what I'm going through, I can tell you they probably have. And so you don't need to make the mistakes, and you certainly don't need to sit and wallow in the outcome of those mistakes. And education, to me, is one of the most important things. I read, on average, a book a week. I just returned from attending a 3-day seminar. I spent about $2,000 on programs from people that were delivering talks at that seminar. I'm now being sent to Hawaii next month to speak at a goddess retreat. And so it's all about education. It's all about learning. And, you know, so if what I've said to you appeals, and certainly pick up my book. I mean, for $20, you will pick up, whatever it is, $17.95 U.S., you will pick up so much good information that you can apply. But you need to continue to learn. And it's one of the things that, of course, as a Jehovah's Witness, I was taught. They attend 5 meetings a week, Ken.
Oh.
And they are expected to read, study, prepare, go from door to door, and attend 5 meetings every single week. It's an active life of learning and education, of teaching and sharing. And I think entrepreneurs sometimes get so stuck working in their business that they never take the time to work on their business. And you will never get to a point where you can walk away from your business, sell it, or create really leveraged, powerful leveraged income if you were constantly working in your business and never working on it.
Well, my beloved listeners, that is key advice that she is sharing that is offered by some of the top business professionals. And not only do you get the benefit of that when you go to devilwithabriefcase.com to order her book or to Jan Jansen, J-A-N-Z-E-N or Z-E-N.com, this is just a phenomenal opportunity for you to move your life ahead as an entrepreneur, as an individual, dealing with a lot of things. Jan, I'm privileged to have you on, and my listeners, I know, are going to be blessed by listening and partaking in your book and some of your services. So thank you for taking time to be with us today, and I certainly look forward to to hearing from people as they get your book and just make their lives better.
Well, thank you, Ken, for having me. It was a real pleasure to have a chance to speak to you today.
Well, that's great. Well, wish you and all my listeners a fabulous, wonderful, blessed week. And until we meet again on July 14th for Bastille Day and learn about some wonderful, wonderful things with cooking and raw foods, I just wish you all the blessings in the world. Thank you, and goodbye for now.
Bye-bye. Let's go, Emma.